Are you ready?
Friday, Friday, Friday.
Friday, I'm in love.
Friday,
I go out on Friday.
It's Friday night.
Yeah, Friday. Woo!
Welcome to First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show.
Happy Friday.
Friday is for everybody.
Today, Lars puts you in the driver's seat. You talk about what you want to talk about.
Government is the problem.
No topic is off limits.
You're a lying dog-faced pony soldier.
Call 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-HEY-LARS.
Crank damn speakers.
Thank goodness it's Friday. Happy Friday.
This is
First Amendment Friday with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network on my favorite day of the week, First Amendment Friday. Glad to be with you. Serving the Pacific Northwest states for the last quarter century with honestly provocative talk. And I got a couple of things to provoke you with to begin with. Number one, nuclear power could be supplying all the energy we need and keep the Greens happy as well. Because as you might understand, we've got nuclear power, we've got uranium in this country that can be taken out of the ground and turned into energy. And the United States won't do it. And even in Washington State, which has working nuclear plants, do you know the Democrats have just blocked one of the ways that the state could have moved forward with a real plan to put real nuclear reactors out there to supply the electricity that we need? I'll give you the details of all that in just a moment. But first, welcome to First Amendment Friday. Good Friday to all of you. He is risen. It is a great Friday, and I'm glad to be with you. If you want to join me, it's 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, we'll put you right to the head of the line. In fact, later on this hour, I'm going to have you listen to one of the best naysayers that I've ever been able to talk to, and we're going to talk to him. I would call him almost the ultimate naysayer. That's coming up at the bottom of the hour. But if you want to call in as a naysayer, you'll go to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Cast a vote in our poll on X, the X poll today. Should the government tax your net worth and not your income? Other than property taxes, the government tends to tax income, or they'll tax spending. So they tax your income if you have an income tax. They tax your spending if you have a sales tax. But does the government ever say, we're going to tally up everything you're worth, and we're going to tax you based on what you're worth? And of course, one of the honest questions that comes right after that is, so if my net worth goes up, I pay a tax. If my net worth goes down, do I get a refund? And the answer, of course, is yes, they'll tax you. No, they won't give you a refund. But this appears to be where the federal government is going. They have just about run out all their options in taxing your income. So now people like Joe Biden, people like Pocahontas, Elizabeth Warren, they want to tax your wealth. Now, they're going to start with the super rich. They're going to go after the Warren Buffetts and the Jeff Bezos and all the rest. But they will work their way down to you just the way the income tax worked its way down to you as well. They began the income tax more than 100 years ago, and they said, we're only going to tax the super rich, and the rate will be very low. And now they tax virtually everybody, and the rate ain't low at all. So should the government tax your net worth and not just your income? My answer to that is no. You can answer any way you like. You'll find the question at Lars Larson Show on X. You'll also find the same question on our website at LarsLarson.com. And brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for your business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Now, before I get to your calls on this First Amendment Friday, this is kind of unbelievable because the Northwest has a great history with nuclear power. Now, if you say, but what about the WHOOPS plants? You know, the ones, the Washington Public Power Supply System, one of the biggest defaults on bonds in American history at the time. Well, that wasn't a failure of nuclear power. That was a failure of government and bureaucracy. But what has happened recently? America has some of the best designs for nuclear plants anywhere in the world. In fact, there are people and governments that are building these plants all over the world. So you'd say, well, of course, if we've developed a lot of the best nuclear power plant designs, wouldn't we be building them here in the green, clean, oh-so-PC, woke Pacific Northwest? Well, apparently, according to Jay Inslee and a bunch of so-called environmentalists and tribal groups, they are asking Jay Inslee to veto a chunk of money, $25 million, that would actually start the deployment of the next generation of nuclear reactors. The money would go to Eco Northwest, which is a consortium of public utility districts and municipality cities that is in the middle of a years-long effort to develop and deploy what they call small modular nuclear reactors at a site in central Washington. So in other words, we've got the site, we've got the technology, we've got all of that, and yet groups like Columbia Riverkeeper and the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation, they want Jay Inslee to veto the money. Now, the money would go to lay the groundwork, do the studies, do all the rest of this. They've got the technology. Last year, a deal was signed with X Energy and Dow Corporation to deploy what's called an XE100 high-temperature gas-cooled reactor at the Dow Industrial Facility on the U.S. Gulf Coast. So, we've got the technology, and at the time, Bob Schutz, who is Energy Northwest CEO, called it the preferred small modular nuclear reactor technology. This isn't about developing an undeveloped technology. This is about actually putting it in place. The agency wants federal loans to cover 80% of the project cost, and then the other 20% would come from public and private capital. $10 million has been put in by Energy Northwest, and Puget Sound Energy up in the Puget Sound area has already said, we'll put $10 million in, and the legislature said there's an earmark in the budget, $25 million. Except now, the environmentalists, the greenies, they don't want the nuclear power to get built. So they want Inslee to veto this $25 million earmark that would start the process of actually getting ready to put these modular nuclear reactors in place. And the beauty of those modular reactors, NuScale, which is a Northwest company that has been developing nuclear power plants for about the last 30 or 40 years. We used to talk to Dr. Jose Reyes all the time. Haven't talked to him in a while, and I'm not sure why. I think NuScale is trying to, you know, play under the radar a bit by not going on a show like this. But what he explained was one of the biggest problems you've got with nuclear power plants is that to finance them, they are hideously expensive and they take a long time to build. So you've got to put up a ton of money and then you wait years for the thing to be finished. And only when it's finished and starts producing power does the revenue start coming back in. The modular, the small modular reactors solve that. You get to buy a piece of a plant, say 100 megawatts. And then you put that in place and it starts generating power right away. And with the power comes money. And then use that money to finance the additional, and you can add in as many modules as you want. And when you decide that one of the modules has either broken or it's run out of fuel, you can pull that module and let the rest of the plant continue operating while you ship that one off to for reprocessing or refueling, and the rest of the plant still operates. In other words, it solves one of the biggest financial problems that nuclear power plants always suffered from. And that was, you built one big giant plant, you didn't get a dime back from the ratepayers until the plant was completely built and already producing electricity. And if the plant went down, the whole plant went down at once. With modular reactors, you could have a problem with one module, pull it out and send it off, replace it with another one, and the plant keeps on operating. That's a beautiful solution. Glad to be with you, and always glad to take your calls. Check out that X-Poll question. Coming up in a moment, the Northwest Nonsense, and your phone calls and emails at 866-439-5277. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
Control explained.
Want to stop drunk drivers from killing sober drivers? Ban sober drivers. That's how gun control works.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say. This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead fish wrapper or mainstream media bias.
The deadly collapse of the Key Bridge in Baltimore Harbor and the plans to replace it tells us something very important about the biggest boondoggle that's going on here in the Pacific Northwest. The Interstate 5 bridge is 50% bigger than Key Bridge. It's 6 lanes wide instead of 4 lanes wide. But Key Bridge is more than twice as long at 8,600 feet to the I-5's 3,600 feet. Both carry interstate freeways. Both must be high enough to let ships pass underneath on the water. So they're comparable in a lot of ways. I-5 Bridge is shorter but wider. Key Bridge is longer but narrower. So then the differences diverge. Today, engineers are estimating that Key Bridge could be replaced in 18 months to 2 years if politicians cut through enough of the red tape. Well, today's cost estimates for that key replacement are running $400 to $800 million. Well, here in the Pacific Northwest, the folks behind the interstate bridge replacement claim I-5's new bridge will cost, get this right, 20 times as much money and take a decade or longer to build. Sounds like every single government project I've ever seen. Maybe there's an engineering principle where construction goes faster and cheaper if you're only 42 miles from the White House and it happens to be an election year. Our question of the day comes in. Rene Gonzalez is running for mayor of Portlandia. He's going to replace Ted Wheeler, who has, I think, wisely decided he's not going to run for another term. Although, who knows, voters might be crazy enough to reelect him. He's calling for a ban on handing out the tents and tarps to homeless people if elected Portland mayor. Gonzalez is highly critical of Multnomah County's use of funding for homeless services and suggests the city and the county should stop backing those efforts without big changes. Well, no kidding. And in fact, a lawsuit already brought about most of what Gonzalez is promising to do. And there's still the shame that Multnomah County literally handed out 100,000 tents and tarps to an estimated 5,000 homeless people. Do the math on that and tell me if you think it makes sense. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now.
Today's Daily Grill goes to Sound Transit up in the Puget Sound area. They're wasting money almost as fast as Portland's transit agencies are. This light rail plan for Seattle that's north of $50 billion, except they keep running into problems, as they usually do with government-run projects. So they're going to hire a young lady out of Los Angeles to come in and fix the problem. Now, what are they going to pay her? $600,000 a year. Now, for the right kind of expertise, it might be worth that kind of money. But consider this. The young lady they're hiring is currently involved in renovating LAX, Los Angeles International Airport. And how's that going? Well, they've had big cost increases and major delays of years. So let me get this right. They're going to hire for big bucks somebody to fix the delays and problems in Sound Transit, and the lady comes from a project, LAX, that is notorious for its delays and cost overruns. Somebody tell me it makes sense, because it doesn't make sense to me. Today's best email, but you can always send more, comes from Kevin Burns. Lars, concerning the prison laundry somebody brought up this week, bidding for a commercial account, could the prison laundry be allowed to bid with inmates still getting 17 cents an hour or whatever the wage is behind bars if the bid included a full wage? If the difference goes into a victim compensation fund. By the way, Pele had a record of 8 goals in a single game. The U.S. record is 5. That's soccer. And the reason Kevin mentions that, I was griping about the fact that in Australia, they actually allowed one team, the Flying Bats, they call them, football club. They dominated a women's competition. Only the key factor they had going for them, 5 of their members were biological males. They managed to score 10 goals in a single game. I don't follow soccer that closely. I'll take Kevin's word for it that Pele's record was 8 goals in a single game. They had one player on the Flying Bats team, biological male, who managed to score 6 goals. He almost got to Pele's record. Now, It's First Amendment Friday. Your calls are welcome. Good Friday to all. He is risen. Glad to take those calls at 866-HEY-LARS. Let's start with Bob. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
How you doing, Lars? On the nuclear power, I remember when I was in Washington State, Bill Gates had a company, and they had a reactor that needed a small amount of fresh nuclear matter to get the reaction going, and anything could run on nuclear waste. And I thought, well, that's got to be a tremendous way to go, because we got tons of nuclear waste sitting around unable to do anything with it. Why not bring some more power out of it?
Well, Bob, I got to tell you something. Nuclear power plants have been effectively able to run on waste for a long time, and here's how it works. I talked to a nuclear scientist once and said, hey, what is the, what's the ratio? And I think it's 4% enriched uranium is what, it might be 6, that they put into nuclear power plants. I said, so when a fuel bundle is seen to be exhausted, you know, meaning you have to replace it, it's not like your gas tank. If you put 20 gallons in the tank and burn 20 gallons driving somewhere, your tank is empty, or it has a few ounces in the bottom. When nuclear fuel is considered exhausted, it still has a lot of uranium in it. It's just not concentrated enough to make the reaction they want. Now, what America should do, which France does right now, I think Great Britain does it as well, is they do what's called reprocessing. They take all the so-called spent fuel that, like I said, still has a large amount of uranium in it. It's just not concentrated enough anymore. They send it off to a plant. We used to have a plant at Oak Ridge, Tennessee. They take those little black pellets that are in the fuel rods. They melt them down with acid. They reconcentrate the uranium. They make new pellets out of it, and they ship the reprocessed fuel right back. We could be doing that right now, and we could take all the so-called waste, which are bundles of fuel that aren't concentrated enough to still do you any good, and we could reprocess it. Except the greenies and others don't like the idea of reprocessing fuel, even though, like I said, the French and the British have been doing it for a long, long time. And wouldn't you say anything the French can do, the United States can do better?
I would hope so.
I would certainly hope so as well. Let me go to Bill. Bill, it's First Amendment Friday. Good Friday to you. What's on your mind?
Hi, Lars. About the tax, Biden wants to introduce what, a total tax?
They're talking about a tax on your wealth. So right now, you pay tax on your income. But if you've got 50 grand sitting in the bank, do you pay tax for merely having wealth?
Wait a minute. You already have tax on the interest.
Well, on the interest, that's the earnings of the wealth, but they want to tax the wealth itself. They want to say, hey, by the way, you have a $200,000 house and it grew to $250,000. We're going to tax you on the capital gain, and we're going to tax you on your overall wealth. And if you've got a bunch of money in your IRA or 401k, we want to tax you for merely owning things that you've already paid taxes on. That's the general idea. Bill, thanks very much. It's First Amendment Friday on Good Friday. Coming up, the ultimate naysayer. You're going to want to hear Chris Cuomo.
The Lars Larson Show.
Is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. And for more than 25 years, we've always said naysayers go to the head of the line. And we always put them first, and we let them object to whatever I'm saying. I think I've actually found the perfect naysayer. And his name is Chris Cuomo. He's got a brand new show now on News Nation, and we may talk about that a bit as well. But I can't imagine that we are ideologically aligned on just about anything. So after a rather, let's say, vigorous exit from the Chicken Noodle News Network, he is now at News Nation. Chris Cuomo, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Lars Larson. It's good to be with you.
Okay, so we'll be Chris and Lars if you don't mind. But tell me this. Before we get into a couple of specific questions I want to ask, tell me about this new gig you've got at News Nation.
Well, as you mentioned, I was bounced out on my behind by CNN, and I'm in litigation with them about that because it was a wrongful firing. They could have told me to leave if they wanted to. They could have done whatever they wanted. I would have complied. I had offered to leave during it because I didn't want to bring any drama to CNN. But everybody knew I was helping my brother. Everybody knew I wasn't reporting on it. And everyone at CNN knew I had nothing to lie about in terms of how I was helping my brother. So, got to litigate it. But I love and respect CNN, even though I don't love and respect what was done with respect. But I think it's a great organization. I miss people there very, very much. News Nation is a very unique opportunity that I wasn't going to take. I wasn't going to come back to cable TV. I felt I had done what I could do. How do you beat being the number one show at the place with the biggest reach in the world? But News Nation is doing something different. You know, it's the only organization whose name reflects the audience, which may seem like a meaningless thing, but it isn't to that place. They did it on purpose. And they want reasonable. They want to push past left and right, have them both on, deal with what you like, deal with what you don't like, but talk to, not about. Have conversations, not just conflict. Because what we want to do is move the needle of consensus to get our politics back to the people in power in the established places, working on the common concerns of everybody from Lars to the biggest lefty in the world. You have common concerns. We've just been addicted to the division between the two instead of the common concerns that should be addressed. That's what News Nation is about. That's what I'm happy to be part of.
Well, I'm glad to have you on because, like I said, I consider you the ultimate naysayer. So tell me this. What has Joe Biden done for Americans that makes him worthy of another term in office? Because I can give you a long list of things that he has done to Americans that have demonstrably damaged Americans individually and this country in as a whole. So tell me, I assume you're going to vote for Joe Biden and not RFK, and I'm guessing you're not voting for the best president of the 21st century, Donald John Trump.
When you say assume, remember what Felix Unger said about and what that does?
It's a question. Are you voting for Trump?
I'm not going to vote for Donald Trump for reasons that have nothing to do with policy. I believe he has disqualified himself as an individual. I think you guys can get the policies you want without a leader that rejects all the things that your party was supposed to be about. On a personal level.
You mean pro-life and low taxes and all those things, Chris?
You can get all those policies with without someone who lies in a way that we've never seen before, that divides for sport and personal gain. I think there are a lot of leaders in the GOP and on the right side of the political spectrum who could deliver the same or better, but they wouldn't be as capable as agents of people's animus. Trump is like a human middle finger to the establishment. And I get it. He's not an antidote. He's a virus. And I get it. I just wish people were making better choices for them in terms of the agent, but also you don't have one available now. So if you want those policies, it's about Trump. On Biden's side, do I believe that there's an argument to be made about his record? Of course. For and against. What's his big weakness? The border. And it's become the dominant issue on the domestic agenda. We've never seen that before, by the way.
And can we admit he chose that policy? This wasn't something he keeps blaming it on Trump, but he chose to do this. Is that accurate?
100%. And it is a continuing choice. And not only, let me help you out, Lars, not only is it something he did, it's what he intentionally undid. He came in and got rid of a raft of executive orders, which is not unusual. Okay, it's what they do. You come in, and part of your principle in a reductive two-party system that's necessarily a battle to the bottom of who is worse or what is worse, you come in and you negate the guy before you. So he gets rid of all these executive orders. But the problem with that was the Secretary of Homeland Security for a minute, who was a tremendous public servant named Mick Aleenan, you may remember him. He had worked with the Homeland Security guys and the executive chamber and all these foreign governments to put together great home country deals like Remain in Mexico,
yep.
Which was not as effective as it is portrayed, but it doesn't matter. It mattered on a low level, and it was a template for all these other deals they had with home countries that greatly reduced the flow of mass illegal migration. Biden undid all of them day one, and it was a humongous mistake. And now the stubbornness of refusing to use executive action. I know he'll get hung up in courts, but so what? At least you're trying.
Okay, but Chris, are you telling us, since we've excluded Trump, I'm assuming RFK's off the table, are you going to vote for a guy for another term in office who deliberately damaged this country with an invasion of more than 10 million illegal aliens and dead Americans, Lars, in the wake of that?
Lars, it doesn't matter who I'm going to vote for.
It does. Okay?
Or if I'll vote at all, by the way, because every time I go to the polling station, I get followed by like six people who are like harassing me the whole time. So I'm a little bit of a different case. If what you're asking is, am I advocating for people to vote for Joe Biden? Of course I'm not. Am I telling them to vote for Bobby Kennedy? Look, I don't think Bobby Kennedy can win, but I think that he is demonstrating something that is very important for us to recognize, which is that the two-party system has failed us. And you can't get to a better place within this system. It will never happen. It is all about which side is worse, and inaction is all you get from this. Even if Trump gets back in, you're going to have a large period of a lot of talk and not a lot of action, because he won't have the numbers, because we're so divided among our leadership. So I don't tell people who to vote for. I really don't. And I got in trouble with the left because I got misquoted as saying I was open and people should vote for Trump. I don't tell people who to vote for. I understand the arguments against Biden. The biggest one on the policy side is the border. I think he has an economic argument to make. He's not making it well. The Achilles heel is his vice president choice. I believe the vice president choices are going to mean the most in this election in your and my lifetime. And if Biden switched out Harris, I think his chances would go up 50% of winning.
Can we admit that he chose her based on basically an affirmative action move? He said, I'm going to pick a black woman, and he picked a black woman. He didn't pick based on capabilities, skills, or talents. He picked her to check some boxes, the way it seems he did with most of his cabinet. Can we agree to that?
His argument would be both. I said I was going to pick a black woman, and I picked a competent black woman. Do I agree with his selection? It's easy to criticize it, and it's easy to replace her with someone who checks the same boxes.
Do you think she's competent, American, Chris?
I think she has not shown her competence. So if she is, well, I don't know.
She's been hiding her light under a bushel for the last 4 years?
No, they've been hiding her because she screwed up so bad early on. So it's not easy to measure her capabilities. She hasn't spoken well. She hasn't messaged well. She hasn't been an effective advocate for the administration. I think those are all fair criticisms.
Chris Cuomo is with me from News Nation. We're going to be back in a moment. I'll get to your phone calls and emails later at 866-HEY-LARS. Send emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And naysayers, always go to the head of the line on the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest.
They talk about serious issues, but even Lars has a sense of humor.
I have a joke for you. The government in this town is excellent and uses your tax dollars efficiently.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I'll get to your calls later. 866-HEY-LARS. My guest is Chris Cuomo. I called him the ultimate naysayer, but so far it seems Chris is agreeing with me on a lot of things, or I'm agreeing with him, whichever way you want to see it. His new show is on News Nation. It's 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern. And Chris, we were just talking about Donald Trump. You see, I think he was a much better president than Barack Hussein Obama. And Joe Biden, the only person happy about Joe Biden right now is James Earl Carter of Plains, Georgia, because Jimmy Carter is no longer the worst president in American history. Would you agree?
No, I don't agree. But it also doesn't matter. Okay. And I would be, my caution to you would be, you're treating this like you're ranking pitchers or something like that, okay?
Well, historians do it.
Well, some do. And again, but that's a racket, right? That's about finding ways of points of advantage off a toxic system. What's the real measure? What's happening for people?
Yeah.
How are their lives? How is their family's safety structure? How are their opportunities? That's the way that I want to look at it. So for me, it's about the policies. Because if you get all, you know, addicted to the personalities.
No, but I'm not doing it, Chris. I'm doing it on policy. So if I say, who provided the greatest opportunity? Let's see, 400% increase in black small business permits during Trump. Joe Biden has been an unrepentant racist to the point where even his VP calls him a racist. Massive inflation that has punished people at home. You get reminded of it at the grocery store and the gas pump and everywhere else. A foreign war into which we're pouring tens or hundreds of billions of dollars with no end in sight.
I get the case. I'm not negating the case. I'm just saying, I wouldn't distract yourself with best, worst, and this and that. Just stick to the policies, because that's what matters to people, and everything else winds up getting to be a distraction.
Let's take a policy. We've already done the border. Let's do energy. Day one, Joe Biden brags, I'm going to shut down the oil industry, even, I think he said this during one of the debates or town halls, even if at the cost of hundreds of thousands or millions of American jobs. So he did everything he could to shut down fossil fuel through federal actions and through pressure on the banks. Was any of that sensible?
Three things.
Okay.
Them blowing up the Iran deal was a mistake. I know it felt good to some of you guys, but look at how unregulated.
You don't deal with terrorists, do you?
Please.
Do you negotiate with terrorists?
They negotiate with them all the time. We're doing it right now every time we try to get people back from Iran or Russia. And the talks that we're having in Gaza right now. Hamas is a terror organization. It's a silly
bomb. Wipe them out. What do you think about wiping out Hamas and ending the problem altogether, Chris?
Trump wouldn't do that.
Trump wouldn't have had to do it. They didn't do October 7 during Trump, did they?
Don't do that. Don't do that. Trump wouldn't do it. Trump's position would be, and you can like it or not like it, is stay the hell out of it. There's no advantage for America. Stay out.
Chris, hold on. I've got to ask you. Stay the hell out of it. He got the Abraham Accords done, arguably the biggest change in the Middle East in probably three decades.
It would have been if Iran didn't blow it up. It was a great initiative. It was well coordinated, and it would have been a good move.
So other than politics, why didn't Joe Biden say, I'm going to take the Abraham Accords. There are four more deals possible right now. I'm going to take that. No, it's connected to Trump. I won't touch it. Why?
They both do that. Look what you're doing with fossil fuels. If everything you're saying is true, then help me understand why America is pumping more oil now than it ever has in history.
Because the price is high. Chris, no, but if you and I owned an oil well, and you said, Lars, the oil prices are higher than they've ever been. They were low under Trump because there was massive exploration, massive drilling. Now they're high. Should we pump the oil out of our well and sell it? I'd say, Chris, we got to sell that oil right now. Of course they're pumping, but they're not drilling new holes.
First of all, that's not true. Okay. Two things can be true at once. All right. And I know that partisans like to play to advantage, but you got to poke holes in it when you can. Was there regulation that didn't exist under Trump? Yes. Is that a good or a bad thing? You got to analyze the regulations.
Two last things, Chris, because you've promised everything's on the table.
We're going to political opponents.
We're going to talk. Oh yeah. Well, they're doing that to Trump right now. But two last things, and we might even agree on the very last one. But I got to ask you this: you advised your brother. Were you okay with him sending all those old folks back to the nursing homes to die?
Not how it happened. And he's got to make the case for himself, but. There are a lot of families that lost people that didn't need to happen. It was a federal policy. It was a directive.
He had lots of hospital beds available on the Comfort and in that giant hospital they set up in New York City where you live. So
I will indulge the question about my brother, even though I am not his keeper when it comes to his policies, right? But he is my brother, and I'm telling you, he mishandled the messaging on what happened with the nursing home situation, because he was not as in the loop as other people in the administration were in implementing the policy that the federal government had directed them to do. And he was told who had to go and who had to stay. That's the part that's left out. Did it wind up leaving people in bad situations where they lost their lives and didn't need to? Probably yes, and that sucks. But if the goal was that's regrettable, find accountability and make it better, that never happened. Because it just became a blame game with one governor in one state. And that's not fair either.
Our thanks to Chris Cuomo from News Nation. Glad to have you with me. I'll get to your calls in a moment. 866-HEY-LARS. Send emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. Vote in our poll on X at Lars Larson Show. You can watch me on Instagram and find I have a face for radio. And you can always tell Alexa to play the Lars.
Welcome to First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show.
Happy Friday.
Friday is for everybody.
Today, Lars puts you in the driver's seat. You talk about what you want to talk about.
Government is the problem.
No topic is off limits.
You're a lying dog-faced pony soldier.
Call 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-HEY-LARS.
Crank that speaker.
Thank goodness it's Friday. Happy Friday.
Friday.
This is
First Amendment Friday with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show on my favorite day of the week, First Amendment Friday, because we open up the phone lines and everybody gets a chance to sound off. 866-HEY-LARS, and if you're a naysayer, you can go right to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. Our poll on X today, found at Lars Larson Show on X or on our website. Should the government tax your net worth and not just your income? That seems to be the direction the Democrats, including Elizabeth Warren, Pocahontas, and Joe Biden seem to be going. You can find the poll on X at Lars Larson Show. And it's always brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Now, I reached out to our friend John DiLorenzo, who's a very, very successful attorney. He usually sues, well, I can't say usually sues on behalf of wronged individuals, but he wins an amazing amount of the time. And one of his biggest wins, as far as I'm concerned, was going after Multnomah County and to some extent the city of Portland, because Multnomah County handed out 100,000 tents and tarps to homeless drug addicts. And then those homeless drug addicts, perhaps 5,000 of them, went out and populated the entire landscape with these tents and tarps in far greater numbers than necessary, blocked sidewalks. John sued on behalf of disabled people and said the city of Portland and Multnomah County were actually violating the rights of people under the ADA. And he won. John, welcome back to the program, by the way.
Thanks, Lars. How are you today?
I'm doing well, but then I read that this guy who's running for mayor, who doesn't seem to have a willingness to come on and answer a couple of tough questions, Rene Gonzalez, has said, I'm going to call for a ban on handing out tents and tarps. And my first thought when I saw that was, I thought D'Lo got that taken care of, didn't you?
Well, I sort of got it taken care of. We sued the city, Lars, because the county had no authority over the sidewalks. And what was blocked were the sidewalks. And so we sued on behalf of people with disabilities under the Americans with Disabilities Act against the city. The city settled. The city resolved to no longer hand out tents in addition to all kinds of other things. They also agreed to devote $20 million over 5 years to keep the sidewalks clear. So far as I can tell, the city is upholding their end of the deal. The problem is Multnomah County continues to hand out tents. And for every tent that Multnomah County gives its nonprofit partners that ends up on the sidewalks, the city has to clean them up under our settlement agreement. So we have Multnomah County spending millions of our tax dollars to put tents on the sidewalks, which in turn the county or the city has to spend $8 million to clean up.
You know, John, you know what you've just
down escalator.
You know what you've just described is the old joke that everybody tells about following a county crew around where one guy digs a hole and the other guy fills it and they're both fully employed every day.
Exactly. It's almost like that scene from Cool Hand Luke. So I am glad that Ray Gonzalez is doing what he's doing. Renee actually championed the ban against the city handing out tents. What Renee is now saying is, county, you have to follow suit. And if you don't, the city doesn't want to pay its dues to the joint office anymore. I think so that's fantastic.
Why isn't the city of Portland then just saying, we forbid you giving away these tents? If you want to give them away outside of city limits but still inside the county, Multnomah County, go ahead. But you're not allowed to give them away to third parties to then transport them into the city, because that's exactly what you described.
They should, but they lack the political will. I have to tell you something. I was at a lunch about a week and a half ago with Dan Field, who is the director of the joint office, works directly under Jessica Baker Peterson. And I said, Dan, you're spending millions of dollars to put these tents out onto the street, causing the city to waste taxpayer dollars to clean them up. Why don't you follow suit? And he said, we think we're saving lives by putting the tents on out on the sidewalks. And I said, Dan, you're not. You are not saving lives at all. What you're doing is you are allowing the pursuit of a lifestyle outdoors. The whole idea is to bring people indoors, to indoor shelter. You're also creating an environment where all kinds of crime can be hidden within these tents. And the tents provide no thermal protection anyway. All you're doing is wasting money. He said, well, we disagree. Well, see, that's the problem. So, you know, I urge your listeners to contact the joint office directly. Contact Dan Field directly. Contact JVP directly and tell them how crazy it is to spend our taxpayer dollars to put tents out on the street only to have the city have to spend a multiple of that to clean them up.
Well, it almost sounds like they're Potemkin tents. Remember the Russians used to build Potemkin villages? They were fake villages, but they look good.
Yeah.
And so they're saying that as you drive down the street, when you see some homeless drug addict curled up on the sidewalk, maybe in the rain, maybe soaking wet, filthy and everything else, that they say, well, if we put a tent around him, nobody will have to see him. You know, it's the old trick that in college you'd throw all the stuff you had in your closet when mom and dad came to visit because there was still a mess. It just was out of sight. So they're doing it for optics.
Well, maybe, but I tell you what, these optics that you mentioned are blocking people in wheelchairs who would like to be able to go from point A to point B to buy a tube of toothpaste.
Well,
you know what? I have to tell you something.
Go ahead.
I have to tell you something. Since it's First Amendment Friday, I'm going to go off script for a second.
Feel free.
I'm sick and tired of politicians who have a platform of taking care of those who are not contributing to society, not paying taxes, and not following the rules. Show me a politician who's telling us what he or she is going to do for people who follow the rules, pay taxes, and contribute to society.
I'm with you, because, John, to your point, right now, Multnomah County has spent $250 million. Puget Sound's spending $500 million a year on the homeless, which is a tiny, tiny fraction, 5, maybe 10,000 people out of 800,000 in Portland, 800,000 in Seattle. And you say, how about your parks where there are no there's no lighting, which makes them dangerous for the hundreds of thousands of people who use those? And for $500 million, say 2 years worth of the homeless budget in Portland or 2 years worth of the homeless budget in Seattle, you could fix every piece of deferred maintenance in the parks, all the trip hazards, all the lights, everything else. And City of Portland says it has $600 million in deferred maintenance. And they said, but we don't have a source for the money. But we can spend $250 million to do things like this, to provide so-called services to the homeless that don't get them off the street. So which one serves the greater good in the community? I can tell you what I think. But, John, I appreciate that comment, by the way. People who don't contribute to society getting the greatest share of the public services, and the rest of you who work hard and pay your taxes, you get nothing. You get the short end of the stick. It's First Amendment Friday. We'll be back in a moment. I want to talk about the Biden administration preventing mergers that would actually bring more competition, and I'll get to your phone calls and emails. You've got the Lars Larson Show.
What a vegan actually is?
They say cows are bad for the environment because all they do is eat plants and fart. just like vegans.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you. What's not a pleasure is watching what the Biden administration has done to America. We got massive inflation, high gas prices, high grocery prices, a foreign war into which we're pumping hundreds of billions of dollars. We've got disaster six ways from Sunday. And it doesn't make any sense. Those are the visible things he does. The things that are a little tougher to watch, and this one's a little complicated, but in a moment, I want to tell you about how Joe Biden's trust busters are going to forbid the merger of two companies. Now, you always hear about this company's merging with that company. Let me tell you something. I'm going to tell you several examples of companies that if they merged, consumers like you and me would get a better deal. And if they don't merge, that better deal is not going to be as likely. But let me get to that in just a moment. First, welcome to the Lars Larson Show on First Amendment Friday. Your calls are welcome at 866-HEY-LARS. If you're a naysayer and you disagree with me, you'll go right to the head of the list at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Vote in our Twitter poll, now called the X poll. That's at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Let's start with Dave. Hey, Dave, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Yes. I looked up the specs for deaths per year across the nation for vehicles entering the freeway the wrong direction and killing people.
Yeah.
And the numbers are 400,000 to 500,000 every year. Deaths, people dying because of that very thing. And this is accurate data. So, I have an idea.
Okay.
I have an idea about how to prevent that. Probably at least 90% of it could be stopped. And would you like me to share that idea?
Yeah, I'd love to. But hold on. 400,000 okay. deaths from wrong way drivers.
I'm sorry. Did I say 1,000?
Yes.
400 to 500. Deaths.
Okay, you did say 1,000, and I was thinking there's only about 40,000 highway deaths in the United States in total. So go ahead. What's your idea?
So it's 400 to 500 per year. All right. So a simple idea, inexpensive, and very doable, and I would estimate saving 90% of those numbers, would be to put in the flip-up, flip-down tire spikes at the wrong entrance to each exit on these highways.
Hmm.
You understand what I mean about...
Oh, I know exactly what you mean, but you're talking about putting in those things on tens of thousands of highway exits and entrances?
Certainly.
So that's not an inexpensive idea to save 400 lives a year, is it?
Well, who says it isn't? Our government, like you just got done saying, spend millions of dollars on tents and stuff. So I think of this as a state thing, and so.
No, they'll go to the federal government and say if it's a federal interstate highway, and that would be most of them, unless you're talking about putting them not just on interstate highways, but on state highways, then you may be talking about hundreds of thousands of these things. And I guarantee you putting them in, even if it costs, say, $100,000 per entrance and $100,000 per exit, that would be almost $500,000 for every single interchange on every single freeway in America. You're talking about major amounts of money to stop something that the highway engineers already do their best to sign those things. And most of the people who do the wrong way driving are intoxicated. And I don't know how you stop that.
Well, now, well, they wouldn't have any choice. They would be stopped because their tires are flat.
Yeah, well, there is that as well. It's an interesting idea. Let me think on it for a while and see what I have. You know, see, at first blush, it doesn't sound like a great idea to me. Let's go to Chris. Hey, Chris, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Hi, how you doing today? Well, been listening to the show all week and hearing about recycling ideas, and I've always kicked around the idea of Portland, especially Portland, because everybody else on the West Coast already does it. So why don't they do their recycling in weight? Like Washington, California, because then everybody that's out there collecting cans won't be so selective. They'd pick everything up and help keep our...
Well, they'd pick up everything that's aluminum or glass, right?
Well, I mean, that was the my objection. I mean, I lived in California, I lived in Washington, and that's exactly how they do it. It doesn't make people selective. They literally would walk around and pick up everything.
Basic idea, wasn't it supposed to be, Chris, that if you bought a 24-pack of soda, and now sometimes, depending on the state you're in, the deposit's either a nickel or a dime, if you're paying $2.50 in deposit, you kind of want to get it back. So the consumer himself or herself brings the cans back, and only a fraction of them end up going into trash cans. Right?
I mean, that's the idea behind it. That's the idea behind it, is to encourage that. But like you spoke about earlier in the week, where there's that percentage of people that don't, and then that money goes right back to that fund or whatever for bottlers and whatnot.
But that's a choice of the consumer. Because there are lots of opportunities where you say, well, if you recycle this, it'll be less expensive. Yeah, it will. And some people will do it and some people don't. I try to throw my plastic bottles and cans and things like that in the recycle bin, and then it goes, in theory, it goes the right place. Although, Chris, you'd be amazed how many places in America, they simply take the recycle bin and the garbage bin, and they both go to the same landfill.
Right. Yeah, in some other country.
But, it's an interesting idea to go back to weight, but maybe they think that it's more likely even that those cans and bottles that get discarded, if somebody like a kid, not necessarily a fentanyl addict, knows if I pick up that can, it's worth a dime. If I pick up 10 of them, it's a buck. If I pick up 100 of them, it's 10 bucks. You know, I understand this has become very attractive to the addicts, because for 10 bucks, you can buy a fair amount of fentanyl or some other kind of drug. And so they go out and they do the trash pickup. And then they feed their drug habit with it, and they're not too crazy about the idea. But going back to that, it's an interesting idea. Let me tell you about what Joe Biden's doing right now, because you say this isn't his problem. It is his problem. The Biden Justice Department is blocking an attempt for two credit card companies to merge. One is Capital One. I happen to have a Capital One card, but I don't use it. And there's Discover Card. You say, well, why would they like to merge? Well, because they're two tiny little fractions of the credit card business. The big dogs are Visa and MasterCard. And I'd never seen this number before, but my friend, the economist, Steve Moore, pointed it out at the Committee to Unleash Prosperity. Visa and MasterCard are 80% of the marketplace. So if you want to talk about monopolies, Visa and MasterCard dominate the credit card landscape. And then you've got Discover and Capital One that are tiny little percentages of the business. If they were to merge, and they would still be less than 10% of the marketplace, but they could be more competitive against Visa and MasterCard. So you say more competition in almost any situation brings about better service and lower prices. Denying that competition, who does that benefit? It benefits Visa and MasterCard. So you have to wonder, the Biden administration has done this with JetBlue and Spirit, which have merged, would have provided more competition for the big dogs. They want to block a grocery store merger between Kroger and Albertsons, who are both small fry, against the big dogs of Walmart and Amazon and Costco. The Biden administration keeps benefiting the big dogs by forbidding competition from the small fry. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show. At least someone has a plan for illegal aliens.
Back in the White House, I will terminate every open borders policy of the Biden administration and begin the largest deportation operation in American history.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. If you thought the problem of an illegal alien invasion was bad, and the drugs, and the child trafficking, and all the other illegal activities that come with it, with murders and rapes and everything else, and then it became even worse. Because some of the illegal aliens said, hey, here in America, and they were telling their friends this through social media, in America, You can just find an empty house, move in, and if you stay there for a few weeks, they can't pry you loose for a long time. And if you stay there long enough, you could literally end up as the owner of this wonderful house. Now, if that doesn't set off another avalanche of crossings of the American border, I don't know what would. But I thought we'd talk to Mark Miller, who's a senior attorney with Pacific Legal Foundation, about how we might solve this problem that seems to be virtually nationwide. Mark, welcome back.
It's great to be with you, Lars.
So you've seen these videos, one guy speaking only in Spanish, explaining to his friends, he's apparently from Argentina, hey, come to America, occupy a house, squat in it, and the laws are all on your side. He's right about most of the country, isn't he?
It really is remarkable. Our laws, you know, there's no such thing as quote-unquote squatter's rights. You can't open up your statutes, your law books, and find some sort of bill of squatter's rights. But over the past several years, we've seen this avalanche, as you said, set of laws that protect tenants at the expense of landlords, where people who move into your house without any authority whatsoever are treated in too many parts of the country as if they are tenants. And so you have to then go to the court to get them removed rather than call the police and just have them removed from your property as trespassers. And as you know, when you go to the court, that's going to take a long time. It can take years, as you point out. This video, John Stossel did a great video on Reason where he showed up. One homeowner was dealing with it for 2 years.
Yep. And New York, they say the average time to remove a squatter is 20 months. Now, Florida just this week saw a new law signed into effect by Ron DeSantis. The legislature in Tallahassee had passed it, and they said, we're giving the police the authority to immediately remove somebody identified as a squatter. Is that where we should be going? And how do we solve this problem that was apparently sitting there like a landmine, just waiting in the statutes until somebody decided a way to abuse it?
Well, taking that second point first, you know, you're so right about it being waiting like a landmine, because in fact, I know some good lawyers who represent banks and foreclosures who've reached out to me and pointed out to me that this has been a problem for years, really since the foreclosure crisis, where when they were representing banks trying to get houses, to get the homeowner who's failed to pay their mortgage out. In fact, somebody else moves in. So the person who held the mortgage leaves and somebody else moves in. And so the bank then is not just foreclosing on the property, but also having to remove a squatter. But it really wasn't making the news like it is now. As to what Governor DeSantis did, you have to give him a lot of credit. He's ahead of the curve on this issue. It's been out there for years, but the legislature and Governor DeSantis saw that this was going to be, a problem that was growing, passes a law that says unless there's a lease, a notarized lease, or you can show that you paid rent, you have some sort of receipt, you're out, that the homeowner can call the police and get you out. And I think other states should follow that model. And frankly, it does look like a bipartisan issue. It seems like it was a landmine. It was this sort of ticking time bomb people didn't see. I would think that even most of the moderate left who supported these tenant laws didn't intend to allow property just to be stolen or, trespassed into and then effectively stolen. And so I would think you should see support here. And my evidence for that would be Florida. In the committee hearings on the bill, it was bipartisan approved basically unanimously in both houses. So I think that's what we will see. We can fight it on the courts too, Lars. That's what Pacific Legal does. But that's going to take a long time.
It takes too long. And I even told my audience, look, in Florida, I could foresee the possibility of some misunderstandings or situations, because there's always going to be one weird case where, the police kick somebody out and it turns out they were actually a legitimate tenant who had a dispute with the owner. I think that's going to be relatively rare. And I'd even put penalties on both sides. I would make it the same as, if you hand over a fake driver's license to a cop, in most states, handing over, presenting a fake ID and pretending to be somebody else is either a violation, it can be a ticket, or it can be a crime. And you could just say, if you falsely represent that you live in a house and you make up some phony rental agreement to defraud the police, the owner, and everybody else, well, then there are going to be penalties for that as well, and make it really hard. And if you're an owner who says, this guy has never been a tenant, and it turns out he has, it should blow back on the owner as well.
100% agree. I think that DeSantis has built some of that into the Florida law. And I think that that's really going to be the best way to deal with it. I'm usually somebody in Pacific Legal. We usually are arguing in favor of less laws and leaving people alone. But here, what we've done is we sort of shunted this new problem into what we called adverse possession or, you know, a landlord-tenant dispute. And that's not what it is. And so I do think we need new laws and the laws you just described that cut both ways. It shouldn't be heavily tilted to the owner because legitimate tenants have rights, do have rights. But when there's people just squatting, as we say, quote unquote, squatting, really trespassing or stealing, they should be out, you know, PDQ.
So, Mark, is there anything I missed about this one? Because I would think that every state would be quickly moving to pass a law like this, and yet I only see it in Florida so far. Do you see it otherwise?
I've read about New York legislators. I'm not optimistic that in New York it will go far, but I do think we will see red states follow Governor DeSantis' lead. I, as you know, Lars, I worked for Kristi Noem for a few years, and, you know, South Dakota, Florida, Texas, they would kind of lead, and then a lot of the other states, Kim Reynolds in Iowa, they would pass good laws, and then the other red states would follow. Here, I think you could see red and blue states follow, and I think this issue is less risky of, you know, constitutional challenge. Like you said, there could be an occasional weird case, but I think by and large, this is something the courts are going to recognize and appreciate. Because, frankly, it will clear their dockets of these kinds of cases that go
on. And honestly, Mark, I kind of look at this and say, in an election year, if New York won't pass a law to protect the people who actually own property or live in property legitimately against those who don't, fine. And you can tell all the people in New York, I'm sorry, you elected idiots. They won't help you. And now you see the consequence of putting idiot Democrats in charge of things while it's being solved quickly elsewhere and not solved in your neck of the woods. I realize it's going to harm a lot of people, but the opportunity is right there. Every single state legislature could pass. They could call a special session, say we've got a short bill. We took it from a model set by Florida, tailored it to the laws of our state, and we passed it quickly. Or they didn't. And if they aren't reminded of that in November, this is the perfect opportunity to remind people. You want to leave your legitimate contributing members of society hung out to dry? Good. Then you'll get the consequences in November.
I couldn't agree with you more. You know, as somebody who's a lawyer who fights in the courts for rights, at the end of the day, the best way to get this country moving in the right direction is to elect better people. That's what we've done in the past. And if people will not, you know, if our legislators won't pass common sense laws like this, then we need to replace them with better legislators. And I think you will see that. I think this is just too far. Property rights is such a basic fulcrum of society. You know, if we can't trust that we own a piece of property and that the government will protect that ownership rights, that's going to lead to a lack of trust in other parts of society. It sort of speaks to what we're dealing with. As you said, leading into this interview and all the different problems we're having as a country, this seems to be one that should be easier to fix than others and maybe get us back on the right track.
That's Mark Miller. Mark is a senior attorney with the Pacific Legal Foundation. Mark, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. We'll be back. It's First Amendment Friday. I'm glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Vote in our poll on X. And you can always check us out on social media, Instagram and all that. And you can tell Alexa to play the Lars Larson Show. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
Message from Lars.
I'd like to apologize to anyone I've not offended yet. Please be patient. I'll get to you shortly.
Who's next? This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a First Amendment Friday, live on the Radio Northwest Network and our X poll today. We used to call it Twitter poll, and I got muscle memory for that. Should the government tax your net worth and not just your income? Seems to be the direction that a lot of Democrats and Joe Biden have been heading. They haven't proposed anything formal yet, but they've suggested We want to tax not just your income, but the net worth that you have accumulated from the money you had left over after the government got its share. I would say no to the idea. You can vote any way you like. It's on X at Lars Larson Show and brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Caesar is a naysayer. Caesar, I'm glad for naysayers. What do you and I disagree about that makes you a naysayer today?
So I tuned in right as you were talking about the merger between Kroger and Safeway Albertsons.
Yeah.
And I think it's a bad idea in general. We've already lost the autonomy that Kroger or that Safeway Albertsons, QFC, Fred Meyer had as individual companies. And I would argue that when Kroger took over the Fred Meyer and the QFC brand, the quality of the entire stores diminished greatly because they instituted their lower standards. And so we lost a couple of great brands, and same with Safeway and Albertsons. When Albertsons bought out Safeway, the quality of meat, the quality of produce, it all was diminished. And so my argument is we're better off with some smaller regional brands than we are with, you know, making another mega company out of Safeway and Kroger.
I guess here's the question I'd ask you. What's the only reason one company usually ever merges with another company?
I'm sure there are often multiple reasons, but
I'm willing to bet there's one primary reason, and it's because one of them is having a tough time making it. Because that's the reason. If you're a big, fat, successful brand, and you say we don't want to give that up, we're going to stay to ourselves. Usually, one is in financial trouble or both, and they figure if we join forces, we can stay as a strong company. I've talked to people in the grocery business. I've never been in it myself. And they've said 3% used to be the margin they made. So if somebody spent $1,000 at a grocery store on groceries, the grocery store made a profit of $30. More recently, I've been told it's closer to 2%. It's a thin margin business, and it has great potential for loss. So if you suffer those losses, go ahead.
I would argue that the reason why companies like Kroger, Safeway, Albertsons struggle, whereas Costco and Walmart excel, it's because Safeway, Kroger are unionized. Walmart doesn't have that burden, and Walmart doesn't have to treat their employees to the same standard, and so it allows Walmart, on top of having their great buying power, it allows them to, you know, employ people for cheaper.
Except, you know why they don't have that burden, Caesar? Because they treat their employees well enough that their employees don't see fit to unionize. And there's a message in that, because you say it's as though Walmart just naturally has this advantage that they don't have unionized workers. There's a reason places don't unionize, and why most Americans have been fleeing from unions. They've been dropping in membership for decades because people have said, I don't need to pay somebody $1,000 a year to do this. But I will tell you this, Walmart's only 17% of the grocery business. Kroger is 4%. Albertsons is 2%. They're very small entities, and I would bet that in the grocery business that economies of scale mean a whole lot more in the grocery business than they do almost anywhere else. But you're a good naysayer. Caesar, thanks for the call. Let's go to Louise. Hey, Louise, welcome to First Amendment Friday. What's on your mind?
Listening to your interview with Chris Cuomo, and it got me a little bit upset because especially when he started going off on his little campaign against Trump, and he made several derogatory remarks about President Trump, saying, for example, he lies all the time. I mean, that's a very inclusive, he lies all the time.
Yeah.
And no pushback from you. What about Biden, who lies, plagiarized speeches, tells his Amtrak story about Angelo, which the man had passed away, never gave him those numbers. And most recently, he said he took the train several times over the Francis Scott Key Bridge.
I know, and there are no tracks on the bridge. And Louise, we've talked about all those. Here's the thing. When I'm talking to any naysayer, I could probably stop them every three words and say something you just said is wrong. I've started doing some conversations with Cuomo, not because I agree with him, but because I disagree with him. And just like naysayers, I could stop a naysayer but I wanted him to make his point. I don't agree with him that Trump lies all the time either. I do think that Joe Biden does, and I document those lies. So would you rather have me interrupt somebody about every three or four words when they say things that aren't true, or get the gist of what they're saying and then ask them questions that you know, figure out where they're going and why they would say such things? He essentially admitted. Go ahead.
In this case, his sentence was pretty long, and he had like three different, I should have taken better notes. He had like three different negative statements about President Trump, and all I'm saying is, I would have asked him for the proof. Bring me the receipt.
Well, and I expect that in future conversations we're going to do exactly that, Louise. The fact is, people get mad at me because I interrupt, and people get mad at me because I don't interrupt. So I guess if everybody's mad at me, I must be doing the right job. Back in a moment. It's First Amendment Friday, and you've got the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson.
Are you ready?
Welcome to First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show.
Happy Friday.
Friday is for everybody.
Today, Lars puts you in the driver's seat. You talk about what you want to talk about.
Government is the problem.
No topic is off limits.
You're a lying dog face pony soldier.
Call 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-HEY-LARS.
Crank that speaker.
Thank goodness it's Friday. Happy Friday.
This is
First Amendment Friday with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show, and welcome back to the Radio Northwest Network. It's a pleasure to be with you on a First Amendment Friday, live in Oregon, Washington, and Idaho, and hopefully supplying honestly provocative talk radio. You want to be provocative? Tell everybody in Washington State that because of the actions largely of Democrats, it might even be 100% Democrats in Olympia, that your heating costs are going to go up. And they're not going to go up a little bit. They're going to go up a lot. Because the state of Washington has been placed on a glide path to go out and eliminate natural gas. And if you say, but I have a natural gas furnace and a natural gas water heater and a natural gas stove or oven or both or all three, and you say, well, guess what? Your bill's going to go up, and you're going to have to pay for brand new appliances, brand new furnace, brand new water heater, and you're going to pay those electric rates that are going to cost you a lot more money to heat your house, to heat your water, to cook your food. And nobody knows that better than Senator Chris Gildon, who's a Republican representing Puyallup, basically Washington's 25th district. Senator, welcome back to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So the Democrats got what they wanted, didn't they?
Well, you know, they passed this bill out of the House at 2 a.m, which is usually whenever they pass the bad bills. It passed by the narrowest of margins with only 50 votes, which is the bare minimum needed to pass a bill. And I hear that was done with a lot of strong arm tactics on a couple of Democrats who were not necessarily sold on the bill. There was a lot of pressure on the governor to veto portions of the bill. In the end, he did not, and he signed the bill into law as it passed the legislature.
And by the way, this just gets the process started by telling Puget Sound Energy, among others, that you can start moving away from providing natural gas, kind of a soft ban, where PSE can say to homeowners or people who are building homes, yeah, we're not going to provide natural gas for that. And even telling some of their customers, in a few years, we no longer have an obligation to provide you with natural gas. We do it because we choose to. And if later on we decide, nah, we don't want to be on natural gas because the state regulators are all over us, that they are free to abandon gas service to citizens?
Yeah, so what the bill does is it allows Puget Sound Energy to present plans to phase out natural gas to the Utilities and Transportation Committee, and they have to do that by 2027. Now, one thing of note here is that every member of the Utilities and Transportation Committee is appointed by the governor. So I think it's kind of, you can't say that it's an outright ban, but what you can say is it's kind of a predetermined scheme, I would say.
But once it sets that motion, if PSE presents this plan, and as you said, they're going to be under pressure, get rid of natural gas because greenies view this as just about as evil as coal or oil or anything else, that when PSE goes to its customers, Are they going to get much warning? By the way, we're going to stop providing natural gas service and you need to switch over to electric sometime soon. I mean, are citizens even given the assurance we'll have at least 10 years or 20 years or 30 years to make the transition, or should we anticipate something else?
No, it's interesting you mention that, because whenever we were debating the bill on the Senate floor, we offered about 25 different amendments, and one of those amendments specifically said that Puget Sound Energy must give 8 years' notice so that people can start preparing for that transition. They can start getting the electric infrastructure wired into their house so they have sufficient capacity. They can replace that gas stove with an electric stove, the gas heater with a heat pump. And that amendment was voted down by the Senate Democrats.
Okay, so the reality is somebody who's told you have 8 years, I'm told the cost of conversion is between $40,000 and $70,000. So you go to tell a citizen, you live in a $400,000 house, you're not right in the Seattle metro, the $400,000 house, we need you to spend $70,000 to change your house over from gas to electric. You got 8 years to do it. So this person may be paying as much as $10,000 a year to be able to make that switch over.
Yeah, but the thing is, Lars, is that amendment did not hang. That amendment was rejected.
That's if they got 8 years. So it could be a lot shorter.
There's no notice. There's no notice requirement in the bill as it stands right now.
I mean, with no notice at all, that means they could just walk up and say, hey, by the way, Jan 1, your nat gas service stops. Better get ready. And PSE could legally do that right now.
Well, they'll have to go through the process of submitting their plan to the Utilities and Transportation Committee. Then they'll have to have hearings on it. So there's a little bit of a process. But as soon as the Utilities and Transportation Commission approves the plan, they can begin implementing it.
Now, is there any chance to kill this thing, or are we just going to have to throw it to the ballot and then put it to the voters?
Well, it's interesting you mention that, Lars, because one of the parts of the bill contains an emergency clause. That means that the bill becomes effective as soon as the governor signs it, and it is not subject to a referendum by the citizens. That means that typically if there's a bill that the citizens don't like, they have a certain time period after the bill passes. They can go out and collect signatures and put it on the ballot that next November. Because this has an emergency clause on it, you are not allowed to do that with this bill, Lars.
So this now comes down to PSE, which owes its entire existence to state regulators. Am I right? If I state it that way, is that overstating it, that PSE knows state regulators could put them out of business fairly quickly?
Well, but it would be the state regulators would be adjudicating the plan that Puget Sound Energy puts forth.
Senator, one fine tuning to that. Doesn't PSE have to go to these state regulators for every single rate increase they want? So if the state regulators want to put pressure on you, you say, you know what, PSE, the next time you come in and show us that your actual costs have gone up 10%, we might only give you 7. So you're going to be eating 3% of it. And they know that, don't they?
That's correct.
And that doesn't deal directly with the plan. It just says PSE knows if they choose to, they can start denying us rate increases. They can start denying us other things. And the end result of that could be, I'm not suggesting the company go out of business, but they'll buckle under that kind of pressure, won't they?
Yeah, and the thing about it is they're the only ones that are providing service in the area. So there's really no one else to fall back on.
And this is the Democrats, and it was all Democrats. Was there a single Republican that voted for this?
There was not a single Republican that voted for this.
Okay, because they've changed the relationship of utility, and tell me if I'm wrong, citizens to utilities is, if a utility company says we want to provide electric service or gas service, when they agree to do it within a territory, they must provide that service to the citizens, correct?
They have to provide it.
And now they don't.
If whatever plan Puget Sound Energy puts forward, they would not have to, correct.
Wow. Senator Chris Gildon, who represents the Puyallup area, that's Washington's 25th district. Senator, it's always a pleasure to have you on. Back in a moment, I'll get to your phone calls and emails. Can you imagine the kind of damage that California's new crazy electric trains, and I'm not talking about commuter trains, I'm talking about freight trains, and California's got those rules coming right away.
ID Vet.
And now, this musical message to anyone who wants to indoctrinate our school children.
Hey, teacher, leave the kids alone.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you, especially on a First Amendment Friday. We open up the phone lines and we take calls on every single subject. And of course, if you're a naysayer, we'll put you to the head of the line at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. If you want to send an email, we make that easy too. Talk at LarsLarson.com. You can vote in our poll on X. You'll find it at Lars Larson Show on X. And if you don't like X, you can go to my website and vote on it. Just vote once, though, please. We're not a Democrat show, so no multiple votes cast. You'll find that at LarsLarson.com. Now, I want to give you the details on some of the crazy that California is up to, because if California wants to be individually crazy, fine. Then the citizens of that state can decide to vote different people into office. The problem is when California starts to do things that affect all the other states or most of the other states in America, that becomes a problem. And they are adopting new rules that starting in 2030, no train, and we're talking not commuter trains, but freight trains, older than 23 years. So all the trains will have to be made 2007 or newer to be able to operate in the state. Starting in 2030, half of all trains, freight trains included, must be zero emissions, which, as we all know, is a fraud anyway, because the electricity has to be made, and it's still made in large part in this country with fossil fuels. But they must be, half the trains have to be zero emission, and by 2035, all trains must be zero emission, meaning electric. Well, that's fine. Except that freight trains don't stop at the California border. They go into other states, which means no diesel trains are going to be allowed into the state after 2035, and only half the trains in the state may be diesel-powered, which is describes almost every train in America right now. So since California is such a major port state, how do you get goods in and out of California to the rest of the country when California is calling the shots? I think there's a real constitutional issue here because of the Commerce Clause in the U.S. Constitution, but I'll get into some of the other details in a moment. First, it's a First Amendment Friday, so let's go to Glenn. Glenn, you want to talk about Sam Bankman-Fried, who's going off to prison for not nearly long enough?
Lars, do you really think that he's going to be put away for 25 years, or do you foresee a certain Democratic president that will probably pardon at the end of the year?
He might. I mean, Joe Biden could pardon him. I think it would create such outrage against not just Biden, but the Democrats. There's a real political cost to be paid if he takes a man who cheated people out of the estimate is $10 billion. He had literally hundreds of thousands of victims, both big and small. And he got 25 years, which was a fraction of what Bernie Madoff got. Bernie Madoff got 150 years, and the two cases were somewhat comparable. Do you think that Joe Biden would do that, knowing that the blowback won't just go to Joe? It'll go to every other Democrat unless they condemn what the president does.
I believe that he would probably, with the intelligence factor, he would probably still do it.
The only thing I wonder about, Glenn, is oftentimes you can point to people who get presidential pardons. There were certainly a bunch of them under Bill Clinton where you could say there was a political or financial benefit to the Clintons out of giving a pardon. And very rich people get pardons. Sam Bankman-Fried is not rich anymore. His parents are still law professors at Stanford. I don't know how long that's going to go on, because I don't know if any criminal charges be brought against the parents, especially his dad, for his involvement in the business. But what's the political gain for Joe Biden to pardoning Sam Bankman-Fried versus letting him rot in federal prison?
Well, if he still controls the money, or, you know,
but
they haven't really found all the money that he supposedly had taken. And he's definitely a Democratic treasure chest that, you know, they were providing the Dems a whole lot of money.
Well, he was a treasure chest. You're right. And, you know, Glenn, one of the great ironies of the FTX collapse is that I just read earlier this week that apparently a lot of the investments that FTX had been involved in grew in value for, you know, the last couple of years, and that they say they may actually get full recovery for almost all of the victims of the FTX collapse. And if that's the case, good, because with Bernie Madoff lived large for decades on the money he stole from his clients, so they didn't get nearly enough money to pay everybody back, but it might actually happen with FTX. Let's go to JC, who's a naysayer. Hey, JC, we love naysayers on this program. What's on your mind?
Yeah, good afternoon, Lars. Thank you for taking my call, like always.
You bet.
I'm calling.
What's up? What do we disagree about, JC? Let's get right to it, because I hate when we waste time with a good naysayer.
You bet. Awesome. Trump, obviously. I don't like Trump. You know, I don't like Biden either, but Trump by far takes the cake. I mean,
what was bad about him?
What? Not very many things are good about him. I mean, the guy almost.
Well, I could give you a list of good things. Why don't you give me your favorite thing that Donald Trump was bad at as president?
My favorite thing that he was bad at?
Yeah, you say he's the worst president ever. Tell me what he was bad. What did he do that didn't help Americans?
Probably keeping his zipper unzipped was not very good.
Well, hold on. Now you're referring to whether or not he had extramarital affairs, which nobody has any proof of. And how did that affect you as an American? Were you involved in his zipper?
No, I'm not. I mean, you are.
I would hope not.
Probably donated to it. Because I'm a kind of a moral type of a guy. I look at the morality of things. I'm not a big Christian. But,
that's sad.
Happy Good Friday,
by the way, even though you're not a good Christian. But I'm still not getting you, JC. You care about alleged extramarital affairs that Donald Trump had before he ever became president. You haven't told me what he was bad at to make him what you call the worst president.
Well, he was really bad at lying. I mean, he could have been a little better liar.
Give me your favorite lie he told.
There's a lot of vocabulary.
But you got to have a favorite. If you ask me about Joe Biden's lies, I'll tell you a whole raft of them. But tell me your favorite lie that Donald Trump told.
He was going to lock up Hillary. That's one of the top. And he was going to have Mexico pay for the wall. That's another big one. He was going to bring the Republicans together. I mean, look at the Republican Party now. Look at his party. He doesn't even have a party. If he did such a good job those 4 years, why is his vice president saying he has nothing to do with him? Because
well, that's one guy, and Mike Pence has a lot. I used to be a fan of Pence. But I'm not anymore. But I'm just curious, if you say he doesn't have a party anymore, why is it that all the polling indicates that Republican candidate Donald Trump, who will get the nomination this summer, is the odds-on favorite to win the presidency? If he's doing so badly, why is he so likely to win?
Well, I don't know how you believe polls. I mean, you remember the 2016 poll, right?
I understand, and it's polling tight.
Hey, don't
but
bring
right,
that up.
But if he's so bad, why isn't he polling down in the dumps? Why is he giving Joe Biden a run for his money? Answer the question, please.
Well, obviously, because Joe Biden's not doing a good job, right? We can admit that. But we're talking about Trump. Trump is probably the biggest idiot. I mean, it takes an idiot to defend an idiot. You'd agree with that, right?
Tell me one idiotic thing he's done.
He's ruined the Republican Party. He ruined the Republican Party.
No, he took apart the deep state, and he went after the establishment, and it's been a long time coming, but a lot of us have been waiting for somebody to take apart the establishment Republican Party. You got the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show.
always ask Lars if he wants to run for public office, like president.
Do you know how much power I'd have to give up to be president?
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's First Amendment Friday. Glad to be with you and always glad to take your calls. I'll get back to your individual calls here in just a moment. I don't want to talk about Bidenomics. I don't know how Joe Biden or any of his handlers or his campaign ever thought that they were going to run a successful presidential campaign by bragging about an economy in which average consumers are just being crushed. I mean, the numbers are pretty easy. I don't even have to be an economist to say if groceries and gas and everything else are up by more than 20% and your paycheck has not increased at least that much, which is the truth for the average American out there, then it means that you're paying more to get the same stuff that you got 3 years ago. And even if your paycheck got bigger in numbers, it isn't bigger in spending power. It's actually smaller than when Joe Biden sadly took the oath of office in January of 2021. So I thought I'd bring on a real economist, Chief Economist Vance Ginn, who's at the Texas Public Policy Foundation. Vance, thanks for being willing to take my layperson questions today. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing well, Lars. How are you?
I'm doing well, but I'm trying to do some math here. So I see that they're saying, well, inflation's up 2.8% on a 12-month basis, but it's up 0.3% for the month. And what I always do with those numbers, tell me if I'm going the wrong way. I take 0.3, I multiply it by 12, and I get 3.6% inflation, but they say it's only 2.5% on the 12-month basis. What's going on there, and are we seeing monthly numbers now that are foretelling us that we're going to be in even worse inflation in a few months than we're in right now?
Well, your math is correct there, Lars, and so you should maybe be doing this at BLS instead of them. But you're right. I think you do want to look at the monthly basis because that's telling you where inflation is going to be heading, not where we've been. So, yes, over the last 12 months, it's up 2.5% for the headline PCE inflation. If you exclude food and energy, which, of course, we all buy, but they call it the core PCE inflation, that's up 2.8%. Both of those are well above the 2% rate of inflation that the Federal Reserve has a target for. So, they're not done with this yet. And I'll just add right now, as we get talking about this, is that you're exactly right that real or inflation-adjusted average weekly earnings are continuing to fall. They're down 4.2% when you look at CPI inflation since January of 2021, and they're down 1.5% if you look at the PCE inflation because they have different ways of measuring them. So either way, Americans are getting hit hard by Bidenomics.
So in simple terms, something that somebody would have bought on March 29th of 2023 for $100 now costs them $105. That's easy for people to understand, but where and the other piece I want to throw into this, consumer spending is up 0.8% in a month. And I thought, hold on, I thought everybody had maxed out their credit cards. Their paychecks aren't keeping up with inflation. I mean, am I just seeing inflation instead of, it's not real consumer spending, that most of that is just the everything costs more. So when you see people buying the same stuff they bought a year ago, it looks like it costs more now. You're saying consumer spending is up. It's just the dollars spent are up. The things they're buying are not. Or have people suddenly figured out a secret stash of cash and they're spending that? Because I don't know how people are spending the money.
Well, if they find it, let me know. I may need some as well, but I got three kids.
No kidding.
But I mean, yeah, but no, you're exactly right. I mean, these aren't adjusted for inflation. And when you look at this 0.8% increase, you've got to really take that into account. It's not the number of the quantity of goods that they're buying, which is really what you want to be able to look at, but it's also adjusting for the prices. And so this is not a good situation. There was a period of time where there was a lot of excess savings during the pandemic and thereafter with all the checks that were being sent out and unemployment insurance that was plussed up or increased by the federal government. You know, a lot of people ran on a lot of excess savings, but that's been depleted quickly. And that's why so many, you know, we've got a hardship right now where many people are still sitting on the sidelines that need to start going back to work. We're starting to see a little bit of that now, but now jobs are drying up at the same time. So it's going to be a tough situation, and this is exactly what Bidenomics does, right? It's a matter of inflation and less supply, which leads to less economic growth in the process.
Yeah, and then you've got Biden who keeps trying to figure out new ways to pay off people's student debt. That's inflationary, but it's one way to shovel money out into the economy. But as people find their credit cards filled, their bank accounts, their savings accounts emptied, and their paycheck not as big in real dollars as it was a year ago, Does that mean we hit the wall sometime this summer?
I think so. I think so, and I think we're already there. When you start looking at some of the states, which I do a lot of work at the state level as well, you're seeing some states are already starting to contract pretty heavily or not have much job growth over the last year, including places like Louisiana. California has been pretty fat comparatively. But there's also some other states that are really having a tough time compared with like the more red states like Texas and Florida, Tennessee, that have no personal income tax. We're seeing a lot of changes. So the job creation that's happened under Biden is in spite of all of the policies he put in place, and it's really been in the red states. Florida and Texas have been leading the way by leaps and bounds of all the jobs that have been created. It's not in the blue states like California and New York.
Well, and am I wrong? I'm a partisan guy, and I imagine that at Texas public policy, you have to be nonpartisan. But when I look at this, the opportunity there for Trump, Trump gets the win in November, and I expect him to, but let's just say he does. He comes in January, reverses all the executive orders on oil. Immediately, all those places like Louisiana and Texas and Oklahoma and North Dakota, they see a gigantic jump because they know he's going to start leasing lands for drilling, and he's going to let people, he's going to reduce these crazy executive orders that Biden passed. There's a great potential for a jump in the economy given the right decisions in January. Or we could keep going the way we're going if we ended with Biden out of November.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of truth to that. And I should note that I'm not at TVPF anymore. I have my own thing. I'm president of Ginn Economic Consulting. And so I can kind of talk about this from the politics angle. I don't have to worry about that. And so I think you're exactly right. We've got to unleash the American economy. And that's what was happening during the Trump years. Yes, you got the COVID situation and all that. But when I was at the White House from June 2019 to May of 2020, that was what we were focused on, was deregulating. How do we cut taxes? I think there needs to be more of a push to cut spending. Spending is a big driver on that. So maybe in a second term, that would be the case. But if we have Biden in there again, this is going to continue the malaise that we have now. Yes, a lot of the headline numbers look good, like unemployment rate of 3.9%. But when you dig deeper, Lars, you find that the labor force participation rate went down so much that the actual unemployment rate is closer to 6%, not this 3.9%.
Ouch. Well, and tell me if I'm right or wrong about this, Vance, because I point this at people say it's great on unemployment. Jobs have been added. Isn't one of the biggest, if not the biggest, categories of jobs that have been added that weren't just jobs shut down by the pandemic and then returned to life, you know, reinvigorated and brought back to life? Other than that, one of the biggest categories has been healthcare, which is mostly government spending, and straight out government jobs, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, exactly right. So Biden likes to say he's created 15 million jobs. Well, first of all, a president doesn't create jobs. The private sector does, but he tends to believe that, right, that he's done it all. But if you actually look at the number of jobs that have not just been recovered, but actually new jobs since February of 2020 before the pandemic, there's about 5 million. But we're talking about 4 years later. I mean, there's still only 5 million more jobs that have been added. So we're on a much slower trajectory than we were during the Trump years. And that's why we're seeing so much hurt within the labor market. Something else that I look at, though, is not just the establishment report that counts all those jobs, but I look at the household report, and that one has jobs declining, employment declining for 4 of the last 5 months. And so this is a tremendous cost, and I think that we may already be in a recession. We haven't got all the numbers in yet, but just like 2022, there was 2 consecutive quarters of declining real GDP. They never counted it as a recession. I think it's a political thing, and so now that I think we're in another recession, they're probably not going to count it again because they don't want it to look bad before the election.
Of course not. That's Vance Ginn from Ginn Economics. Vance, thanks very much. I appreciate the time. It's First Amendment Friday. Back in a moment with your call. 866-439-5277. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
Trump with a warning to Hamas at the Republican Jewish Coalition Conference.
If you spill a drop of American blood, we will spill a gallon of yours.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back.
comes Hunter chasing tail, left behind a money trail. Hippity hoppity, prison's on the way. His laptop's filled with videos. If it was yours, to jail you'd go. But he's protected by the DOJ. There was coke found in a locker. He had hookers, 1, 2, 3. He flashed online an illegal gun and took cash from the CCP. His artwork, how it really sucks, but people pay Hunter big bucks. Everybody knows it's bribery.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. That's our great parody guy, Jim Gossett. You can find all of his songs archived on my website. You can also find them at Patreon. Pleasure to be with you on a First Amendment Friday, and always glad to take your calls. And I've been remiss in doing that. Dave's on the line from Sunnyside, listening on the Radio Northwest Network. Hey, Dave, welcome to the program. What's on your mind? And by the way, happy Good Friday.
Hey, happy Good Friday to you too, Lars, and happy Resurrection Weekend, Easter.
Yes, sir.
Hey, I just wanted to bring up a point. You were mentioning how California is going to shoot themselves in the foot with another problem besides the gas appliances in the houses, talking about electric trains. Well, they've already done something similar to that to the trucking community back in 2007. If you have a truck that's older than 2007, then they have the possibility, the CARB, C-A-R-B, California Air Resource Board, they can, which they set up stops all around the rest areas in different places. If they want to, they can charge you $15,000 to $20,000, and you can't drive your truck out of that.
You have to have it towed out of the jurisdiction, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and I guess what I'm thinking, Dave, is that with trucks, I don't like the idea with trucks either. But imagine this. So California says all trains that operate, half of them by 2030 must be electric, and by 2035 all must be electric. So when all these shipments come into these huge ports, Port of Oakland, Port of all these other ports on the Pacific Coast, and they load the car, will they load the cargo on an electric train that then drags it to the border, the Nevada border, or the Oregon border, where it is then decoupled from the electric train that circles back to the port, and then a diesel train, picks it up there? Or does California effectively force every other nearby state to make all of its trains electric as well, which I think violates the Commerce Clause? Either way, it's going to add gigantically to the supply chain problem and to the cost of shipping, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And that scenario also is happening in the trucking industry, to where a lot of guys just refuse to go into California. So they do go to the border. They go to the California border, and they drop their trailers there, and then they have somebody come in and pick them up and take them into where they're going to deliver it.
Well, you know, Dave, one of my rules, and Tina knows this rule, is she'll say, I need to move this couch. And I said, where is it finally going to? Because I'd like to move it once, because it takes effort to move stuff. And especially if it's big and heavy, I want to move it one time, not six times. And so, and in business, every time you have to change from one truck to another, you know, load stuff off one, you know, from a ship to a train, to a truck to a train, every one of those moves costs money, and usually a substantial amount. They're going to increase the cost of shipping from the Pacific Coast dramatically, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And you're right. Every time you transload something off, even if you leave it in the same trailer and come to pick it up, you get a freight rate that goes from the Yakima Valley with a load of apples, and then all of a sudden you get to the California border. So you got to find somebody to drive the truck up from L.A. up to the border, and then
deadhead
the trailer and take
deadhead
it down,
right?
You know, yeah. Yeah,
because they're doing bobtail all the way up to pick up your trailer, and the likelihood they can bring a trailer up that's going into Oregon and drop it off there and swap it for the trailer you're doing, in any case, it costs a lot of money. Dave, thanks a lot. I appreciate the call. Let's go to Cheryl. Hey, Cheryl, welcome to the Lars Larson Show on First Amendment Friday. What's on your mind?
Yes, hi, Lars. So I'm calling because of that caller, your naysayer, that was just recently on regarding Trump. And this is what I would say to people that make that argument, you know, Trump can't keep his pants zipped kind of thing. That really annoys me, because in the society, the culture we live in today, people go out and they have one night stands all the time. I mean, it's like the norm. And so I would ask all of those people, and that young person, he sounded young to me. So I would ask him, does he really have a moral high ground there? Because if he's going out to the bar scene or where, whatever, picking up a girl and they, have sex, how is that any different? You know,
he's not president or seeking to be. But everybody seems to take it as an article of faith that Trump had a one-night stand with Stormy Daniels. She says it happened. She's also recanted that story. Trump says it never happened. And yet they say, well, if he paid her money to keep her mouth shut and not tell stories about him, false stories in his view of it, then he must be guilty of it. Well, apply that to everybody else. I think Joe Biden's a pervert. I think he nuzzles the necks of ladies who are not in his family and he's not married to. I think he puts his hands on kids in ways that are just freakishly perverted. And yet they seem to give Joe Biden a complete pass. But Donald Trump, he must be a philanderer. It's First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson.